inside the Locked On NFL Draft Podcast. I am Trevor Sycamore. With me is Benjamin Solak. We are at pick number 14 of our guest mock draft series. And Ben, as you could guess, I am very, very excited about this one because this is the pick held by the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, a team that I covered very closely over the last 3 years. I've seen, read about, heard basically every single option that you could possibly have at number 14. And a lot of those options are still left on the table. Before I get to what you might think of this pick, Ben, I want to recap it for everybody at home. Joe Burrow went number one, Chase Young number two, Jeff Okuda three, Jedrick Wills four, Tua Tagovailoa five, Justin Herbert six, Javon Kinlaw seven, Isaiah Simmons eight, Derek Brown nine, Tristan Wirfs 10, Andrew Thomas 11, CeeDee Lamb 12, Jerry Jeudy 13, and that puts the Bucs on the clock. Ben, this is an exciting pick here for the Buccaneers because they're bringing in a brand new quarterback. They're bringing in Tom Brady. So I don't know if they're going to go all out on offense or they're going to try to give him some help on the other side of the ball. Do you have one inclination one way or the other?
My inclination is to say absolutely nothing during this podcast and just let you do all the heavy lifting. Inclination is to sit here, drink my coffee, and let you do the work on this one. But I know from what you've told me, if an offensive tackle's on the board, you don't expect them to go any other way, and there certainly is an offensive tackle on the board. So that would be my guess.
Yeah, you pressing mute on your mic would, in fact, be my perfect podcast. So this might be beautiful. The one that everybody might be one of my favorites. And, hey, look, I know the Buccaneers really well, but I still need help getting some inside information, having a conversation about what the options are for the Buccaneers at number 14. And to do that, I have my former boss and my always very good friend, Scott Reynolds, on the line with us to talk everything Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Scott, thank you so much for joining us, man.
Always a pleasure, guys. Thanks for having me on.
So let's just talk about the Brady stuff first. I mean, we have to, right? The biggest news of the offseason, the greatest quarterback of all time, finally switching teams after 2 decades playing with New England. I'd love to hear it from your perspective, because at this time, you were covering this a lot closer than I was. When did you really know Brady could be a thing in Tampa Bay? Because, you know, I'm sure we heard whispers all the time. Everybody talks about these fantasies. They throw out names. But when did it really become real that Brady could be the quarterback? And then at what point did you know, okay, they're in the driver's seat, or they're actually getting Tom Brady to switch teams and come down to Tampa Bay?
Well, to answer your first question, Trevor, ironically, it was the first Pewter Nation podcast that you weren't a part of.
Wow. Thanks. Really appreciate it.
It was a week after the season had ended, and we did a podcast, a Pewter Nation podcast on pewterreport.com. called Brady to the Bucks ? On January 9th, and we spent a lot of time really throwing that out there and examining, not just that from a speculative nature, but really why this could make a lot of sense from a lot of reasons. For Jason Light, the general manager, listen, Jason is a really good guy. I think his drafts have gotten better. There have been some big time swings and some big time misses, along with a few hits. And when you look at misses, you got to look at that 2016 draft class, Vernon Hargraves, Noah Spence, Roberto Aguayo. That whole draft class is pretty much a wash. And then obviously Jameis Winston set a lot of franchise records, broke a lot of Josh Freeman's records, but ultimately they wanted to go in a different direction, the quarterback, after Jameis Winston threw those 30 interceptions, which led the league last year, including a NFL record, 7 pick sixes. So, and then you look at Bruce Arians, the quarterback whisperer. He's worked with some of the best, from Peyton Manning to Andrew Luck to Carson Palmer to Ben Roethlisberger. And it's just from an ego perspective, what it would be like to coach the GOAT, Tom Brady, and see if he could help turn the Buccaneers around. And then finally, from the Glazers' perspective, they're the ownership down here in Tampa. They have witnessed a steady decline of season ticket holders and a lot of empty seats at Raymond James Stadium. So what better way to fill that up and create some buzz than getting a guy like Tom Brady? So it made sense all the way around. Then you look at it from Brady's perspective. Last year in New England, I really think Bill Belichick let Tom Brady down. You could see the frustration in those press conferences. You go back and look, the points weren't there. It was basically Julian Edelman and everybody else up there for him to throw to. Rob Gronkowski, they waited until he was going to make his decision. And when he decided whether he was going to return for another year or retire, he decided to retire. On that same day, Jared Cook, a tight end they were interested in, went to went to New Orleans instead to play with Drew Brees. So they missed out on that person. They missed out on Adam Humphries in free agency. They traded for Mohamed Sanu. That didn't work out. He got hurt. They drafted N'Keal Harry in the first round. That didn't work out. He got hurt. They tried Josh Gordon. They tried Antonio Brown. And at the end of the day, Brady was frustrated. What better place for Brady to go than a team that already has an arsenal of weapons to throw to in Tampa Bay? Two Pro Bowlers in Mike Evans and Chris Godwin, two pretty good tight ends in O.J. Howard and Cam Brait. And I think they're going to address the running game big time in this draft to make this a really complete offense. So I think it just made a lot of sense all the way around. And then the second part of your question, I think really about a week before free agency, there were some rumors that if Brady left New England, Tampa Bay would be in play. Then it really came down to the Chargers and the Buccaneers. And I think that he looked at the situation, the East Coast team versus the West Coast team, and looked at the weapons and said, I want to go with Bruce Arians and the Buccaneers.
Now, you brought up the offense and the passing game that's going to be available to Brady in Tampa relative to the talent he had in New England. And I think that's the most interesting conversation, because people ask about the scheme fit with Brady now in a Bruce Arians style of offense. But what I think gets lost in that is the talent fit and figuring out if Brady's ever had even a receiving core like the one he's about to play with. When you talk about O.J. Howard, who hasn't necessarily delivered on a really high draft stock, and you talk about Mike Evans, who's a back shoulder contested catch above the rim sort of a dude, and then obviously Chris Godwin, who's just been a delightful route runner from reduced alignments. Who's going to benefit the most from Brady in place of Winston, and who is Brady going to enjoy the most at quarterback? Where do you think the focal point of this passing offense becomes now that the quarterback position has changed so radically from the gunslinger of all gunslingers in James Winston to, you know, Mr. Methodical and Brady?
Well, that's a great question. And I think that O.J. Howard, from a personnel standpoint, is going to benefit the most. And I would also throw in there, too, just since we're talking passing game, Donovan Smith. Those are two guys that I think, and Trevor knows this, having been in Tampa, that kind of get the evil eye from Buccaneer fans because they were high draft picks. Donovan Smith, a second-round pick. O.J. Howard, a first-round pick. Neither one of those guys have really lived up to their potential, and they have the athletic tools. They just haven't really put it all together to take their games to the next level and become upper echelon players. Having a guy like Brady, the greatest quarterback of all time, if you drop Jameis Winston's pass and it ends up in the arms of another player, Jameis will probably clap you up and say, come on, man, come on, man. If you do that to Tom Brady, Tom Brady will literally jump all over your ass. And if he brings the fire, the competitiveness, the intensity, that you simply don't want to let that guy down. You don't want to be the guy that Brady gets on. And it's the same thing with Donovan Smith. We saw Donovan Smith play some really good football here in Tampa, and he's a good left tackle, but he's not a great left tackle. And what makes him good but not great is the occasional lazy play, the occasional – well, I'm going to take this play off. And it just so happens that's the play where there's a sack, fumble, scoop, and score, and the Buccaneers end up losing by a touchdown. You can go back and point out that play and say, way to go, Donovan. You cost the Buccaneers the game. And that's happened a couple times in Tampa. And I think that now this the pressure that Donovan Smith will be under to protect Tom Brady, and not just any quarterback, not just the greatest quarterback, but also a 42-year-old, about to be 43-year-old quarterback that really can't take and absorb a lot of hits. So I think that internal pressure to be better and not let Tom Brady down is going to really trickle all over this offensive huddle. But I think it's going to affect those two guys the best. And I don't know that Brady is going to make one particular guy better from a scheme standpoint or just throwing the ball. I think he's going to throw the ball to running backs more than Jameis Winston did. I think he'll take the check down more rather than hang on to the ball too long and then, you know, end up getting sacked and losing the ball with a fumble. But aside from the running backs, I think Chris Godwin's still going to shine because Chris is the slot receiver. He's the Larry Fitzgerald role guy here in Tampa. The slot receiver is really the more featured receiver in Bruce Arians' offense than either the X or the Z. So I don't see a lot of change in the number of targets between Godwin and Evans and O.J. Howard. They're going to have to find a number three receiver in the draft somewhere to replace Rashad Perriman. But I think the one area that's going to get more targets and will end up with more catches will be the running backs.
I want to talk about defense a little bit, even though the offense is certainly the side of the ball that's getting a lot of the headlines this offseason. Tampa was pretty noisy when it came to free agency, and not with bringing new guys in, but with keeping everyone that they had from the previous year. And from being there myself and covering, I know that they have high hopes for this group of young guys, but bringing back Shaq Barrett, bringing back JPP, bringing back Ndamukong Suh, you know, having Devin White another year, giving that secondary another year, what's the defensive outlook for this team, especially when it comes to even this number 14 overall pick? Is defense something that they are seriously looking at, or are they really happy with the group that they have and they're just betting on their upside?
I really think that they're happy with the defensive front. I think the only player that would give them some pause if he's still on the board would be Javon Kinlaw, the defensive tackle from South Carolina. He would be an ideal player to slip in there as a rookie, as a backup to Will Golston and get him some reps there. Maybe not a backup, but a rotational player at that five-tech defensive end spot, or at the three-tech defensive tackle spot with Ndamukong Suh in the Bucs 3-4 defense. And I think the Kinlaw has the versatility to play both sides, the defensive end position, the defensive tackle position, and really bring some pass rush. That's one thing that the Bucs have is really good outside linebackers in Jason Pierre-Paul and Shaq Barrett. Both those guys are back, as you mentioned, but they don't have a ton of guys that can get to the quarterback on the inside. Suh only had 2.5 sacks. Vita Vea had 2 sacks. Will Golston had a sack. It's not that those guys are designed to get to the quarterback themselves. That's not really what they're asked to do. They're asked to push the pocket, occupy blockers, and then let the blitzing linebackers, whether it's Lavonte David and Devin White from the inside or those outside guys, get to the quarterback. But having a guy like Kinlaw that can win some one-on-ones, splits and double teams, that would give them pause. But I do think this is going to be a very, very offensive-laden draft for the Buccaneers, and I think they're hoping and anticipating that they will have one of those top tackles available at number 14 for the Bucs. I think that's where they want to go because they want to fortify that offensive line, especially at right tackle where DeMar Dotson probably not going to return. He's 34 years old. They signed Joe Haig from the Colts as kind of a placeholder guy there. But they want to bring in a young tackle to really help fortify not just the pass protection, but also get that running game going. That's the one thing Dotson did not do well last year, much better pass protection than he was in the run game. And they want to get the run game going to give Brady and Bruce Arians' offense more balance. So I would expect them to go offensive tackle there. The only guy that would make them hesitate would be if Javon Kinlaw would be there at 14, but I don't see that happening.
So you say that with the defense, we think that we have the guys in place. You know, we like the personnel that we brought in. We re-signed our free agents. Obviously, when you add Brady at age 42, we're talking about a team that's looking to win in an immediate timeline. What is the ceiling for this Bucs team? And that might be an unfair question before the draft, but let's say they draft exactly as you hope they will, right? Pick after pick is just the guys that you want, the positions you want. This wasn't a playoff team last year, but you're introducing Brady into the formula. We don't even know what that looks like. We've never seen Brady outside of New England, so the range of outcomes is unbelievable. What's the ceiling? What's the most unrealistic up there expectation for the Bucs? And then what's the realistic expectation if things go well? How good can they be? Are they Super Bowl caliber? But really, where are they going to end up?
Well, I'll say this. As someone who I've covered this team, this is my 25th year doing it. I've seen the Buccaneers win a Super Bowl. I know what that team looks like. I've seen the team come close before in 1999. They were in the NFC championship game against the Rams. I've seen what a Super Bowl caliber Buccaneer team looks like. And I think that the biggest key is the secondary. If the young trio of cornerbacks, Sean Murphy Bunting, Jamel Dean, and Carlton Davis, if those guys continue to ascend, And for Murphy Bunting and Jamel Dean, if they don't have a sophomore slump, if they all stay healthy and continue to ascend, I think there's enough talent in the secondary and there's enough pass rush up front where they're not going to be as exposed as they were in the first half of the season. The secondary and the defense got better as the season went along. The points came down. They didn't give up a 300-yard passing game, I want to say, for the last eight games of the season. I really think that's going to be the key, especially in a division where you're playing against Drew Brees and Matt Ryan, Teddy Bridgewater twice a year. Plus, you're going to have quarterbacks like Aaron Rodgers you're going to face, Patrick Mahomes. So that secondary's really got to ascend, and they're counting on that. They're not going to sign a free agent cornerback. They're not going to really address the cornerback position in the draft. They like those guys. Jason Light spent a lot of draft ammo on the cornerback position over the years, and I think he's found his guys. Now, having said that, has that translated to wins? Realistically speaking, in Dirk Cutter's last year, they finished 5-11. I felt that team was a 9-7 football team, and I thought it was poorly coached, and they didn't come through in the clutch. And I felt like there were about four wins that they really left on the table. I thought 9-7, 10-6 would have been the ceiling for that Buccaneer team. But they had the talent to win. They just blew it, and the Bucs beat themselves too many times. That was kind of the case last year. They showed some improvement in that area with Bruce Arians. But at the end of the day, the Bucs still beat the Bucs on too many occasions. And I think Jameis Winston was a big culprit of that. How could he not be with 30 interceptions, including an NFL high, 7 pick sixes. So I think last year the ceiling was 10-6 for the Buccaneers, and I think there were three wins that they let slip right through their fingers. When Brady comes, the mistakes are going to go down, and the Bucs are not going to beat themselves anymore. Do they have enough talent to dethrone the Saints? I don't know if they're there this year. I think for that to happen, the Saints have to take a step back from that 13-3 perch they've been on the last couple of years. And I think they have to come down a notch while the Buccaneers ascend. And I think that's the only way the Buccaneers can probably win the division. Now, at the same time, if you make the tournament, as we've seen with the Tennessee Titans and others, if you make the tournament, even as a lower seed, you can still ascend and win on the road. And I think the Buccaneers can be a dangerous team with Brady because of his playoff experience. Listen, we saw the 49ers last year go from Mobile to Miami, from 4-12 to 12-4. So anything's possible in the NFL on any given Sunday, right? So I'm not going to sit there and proclaim this a Super Bowl favorite by any means, but at the end of the year, if the Bucs are in the Super Bowl, I'm not going to be terribly surprised because of the Brady effect. He just has the ability to elevate the play of those around him. We've seen that, because he hasn't had a whole bunch of stars in New England over the years. He's made players stars. And I think that if I were to say what's a realistic expectation for the Buccaneers this year, I would say number two in the division as a wild card with a 10-6 record. That's kind of where I feel this Buccaneer team should be. And if they get some favorable bounces, if they stay healthy, it could be a little bit higher. And if they get hit with some injuries, it might be a little bit lower. But I think this is a playoff caliber team. I really do.
I love it when people call the playoffs the tournament. I don't know why, but like you calling it the tournament there just gives it a little, you know, March Madness kind of a feel, which is good because we didn't get that this year. So I don't know why. I always think it's funny. I always smile when people call the playoffs the tournament. But talking about that ceiling, what's it going to be here at number 14? We have you on this podcast not just for your vast amount of knowledge, but also to make a pick here for the Buccaneers. We would love to hear your opinion of, hey, if you were on the clock at this point and the board fell this way, what's the pick that's going to help the Buccaneers the most get to that ceiling? And even looking beyond that in 2021, having a better chance to get even further the next year. If the board fell the way that it has in this guest mock draft, who are you taking for the Buccaneers here at number 14?
Well, I'll tell you, if the board fell this way for Jason Light on April 23rd, he would be ecstatic because I think the tackle they want the most is Mekhi Becton from Louisville, and that would be the pick at number 14. That's my pick. That would be Jason's pick because this guy is just a people mover. He is 6'7", 364 pounds, long arms. He literally has toll booth type arms where – he just sticks the arms out and you got to run a quarter mile to get to the quarterback.
Yeah.
And that's kind of how it was with DeMar Dotson. DeMar Dotson was not nearly as big and strong as Mekhi Becton by any means. But at 6'9", with those long arms, that's what helped DeMar Dotson. Even if he got out late in a pass set, those tool booth arms just help out. That's where arm length helps offensive tackles, especially. And this guy just has some absolute monster arms and hands when you look at it. Nearly 36-inch arms, nearly 11-inch hands, and he is just a massive man. And that we talked about before, the Bucs not being really adept at running the ball, and that really wasn't DeMar Dotson's forte. DeMar Dotson, you know, was maybe 310 pounds at 6'9", really kind of a skinny, lanky right tackle. That's not the case with Mekhi Becton, 364 pounds, and he probably played a little heavier than that at Louisville. In Tampa, he'll play probably a little bit lighter because of the heat and humidity. Still, you're getting a massive man, 360 pounds. This guy can move people in the run game, and that's what they want. So I think Mekhi Becton, from a pass protection standpoint with Tom Brady, as well as really focusing on the ground game and having Brady really have the option for play action passes with a credible running game that will force the safety into the box, Mekhi Becton would be an ideal pick for the Buccaneers at 14.
Really quick before we let you go, if they're going O-line in the first round, we think of running back in the second round. I mean, like, does it have to be running back at this point? I feel like it does, right?
Well, I wouldn't say has to, because remember, they need a number three wide receiver too now, and this is a very rich wide receiver draft. If there's a player like Laviska Shenault or Brandon Ayuk that slides down there, the wide receiver position in Tampa, the Bucs really don't run too much of a two tight end offense like Dirk Cutter did. Bruce likes to run a three wide receiver offense. So that player, that number three receiver, is going to be spending a lot of time on the field. And so you could really see the value in taking that player at number 45 for the Buccaneers, you know, even wide receiver. But running back, yes. I could see Clyde Edwards-Helaire. If J.K. Dobbins is there, those are two guys. The Buccaneers would love to see Jonathan Taylor or DeAndre Swift there. I think they have those guys rated higher. I don't think that's going to be the case. But at the same time, though, Trevor, if they don't manage to get a running back in the second round, in other words, if they pick a different position, a first-round caliber player that's available that they want to grab instead, this is a pretty deep draft of running back. And I think you could look at some guys like Cam Akers, DJ Dallas, as some guys that could be good compliments to Ronald Jones. They like Ronald Jones. They're drinking the Ronald Jones Kool-Aid. They have him as the number one guy. It's not like they need to draft a player that's going to unseat Ronald Jones. They like the path that he's on, the ascension that he's shown from a disastrous rookie season to last year when he led the team in rushing with about 800 yards. So I think they're looking for a guy that will compete with them for playing time, but not necessarily unseat him. That's why I could see the Bucs slide to the third round and maybe get a Cam Akers if they don't go that direction in the second round.
Man, not only did we get some first round targets, we got a lot of second round targets out of Scott here, which is why he's the best, and that's why he chose him to pick at number 14 for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Scott, it is always a pleasure talking Buccaneers football with you. We really appreciate you joining us.
Okay, always a pleasure, guys. Keep doing your thing at TDN. I love the draft coverage, guys.
We really do appreciate it. Ben, that means that now we are up to number 15, the Denver Broncos, and as the board is falling right here, they got some good options, probably more options than they thought they would have. We know that Scott was excited to pick for the Buccaneers. I'm sure who we have to pick for the Broncos will feel the same way. Until then, you guys keep it locked right here on Locked On NFL Draft.